So good evening, Shalom Aleichem, everybody. I hope everybody's been doing well. I understand that the lectures, Baruch Hashem, have been going very nicely. I spoke with some of the students. I spoke with the Magid Shir. So my understanding is things are Baruch Hashem progressing nicely and that you're enjoying the course. If what I'm saying is not correct, please let Yaakov know or let me know, because we want this course to be exciting and enjoyable, obviously Torah learning, and also as well stimulating for you in terms of the careers that you may be going into. So tonight I'm going to be speaking about a subject that I think is critically important. It's in the newspapers all the time, it's in halacha all the time, and it's halacha l'maisa. According to Islam, nobody should ever have to be on the receiving end of it, but maybe some of you will be zocha in some ways to be on the giving end of it, and we'll talk about the whole spectrum of donations and the halachic imperative, halachic permission, or halachic prohibition to be on the giving or the receiving end. This is one of the most fascinating sugyas. This is one that has caught the fancy of many, many people and is a very exciting sugya as well as a very exciting medical topic. So transplantations are as old as the Chumash, right? The first Sukkim and Chumash talk about the creation of Chava. So someone argued that that was a transplant. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took the Tzela, whatever the Tzela was from Adam HaRishon, and transplanted it, made it into Chava. You like that? You don't like that? That's not important. The idea there is that we do have to discuss things. Nothing is new. Ein Chodesh Tachas HaShemesh. And from the very beginning of the creation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into the creation the possibility of transplantations. The Targum Yonah of Zion, which we're going to actually learn when we talk about transgender in a little bit more detail. So the Targum Yonah of Zion says that the first transplant that we have recorded in all of Tanakh was the transplant of the womb, of the uterus, from Leah into Rachel and from Rachel into Leah. Look at the Targum Yonah of Zion on the spot there. He says that's what happened, that the wombs were transplanted. So that's a real transplant. And we have now, for the first time, accomplished that medically in 2016. They have now done uterine transplants in women that were created without a uterus, and they have given them the ability to go and have children. A woman who didn't have a uterus that was capable of accepting the implanted fetus inside of her. So for the first time in recorded history, in 2016, we have a uterine transplant. So this is a fulfillment of what the Targum of Yaziel says actually happened, albeit HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it through Nisim, but now we have the ability to actually go and take a woman who passed away and doesn't need her uterus, or a woman who's donating her uterus, whatever situation that may be, and transplants it into another woman, and now we have carried a child for the first time in that transplanted uterus. So this is an absolutely phenomenal extension, if you wish, of a halacha in theory to a halacha lemaisa in practice. So we can go and discuss lots of this, you know, ideas of this is a transplant, is this a not transplant in Tanakh, but we now have the ability to go and do real transplants in life. So where do we stand with transplants? So you need to know a little bit of medical background before you can understand the halachic background. When were the first transplants done, or the first attempts at transplantation done? So they were done hundreds of years ago, not that recently in time. They were done in the 1800s. They were all unsuccessful, or mostly unsuccessful at that point in time because of other issues. But the real transplants in terms of modern society started in the 60s. And the most interesting, or one of the most interesting scenarios, was a successful lung transplant that was done, I think it was in 1964. I'm looking to see if I wrote down the exact date, but I don't think I did. It was done at Columbia Presbyterian, and they did a successful kidney transplant. I'm sorry, I think it was in 1964. Don't quote me on that. I thought I wrote written it down, but I guess I didn't. But it was around 64. I don't remember exactly. I'm sorry, I thought I wrote it down, but I didn't. But that's not the important thing. The important thing was that that was successful. And only maybe a few years ago, maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago, maybe a little bit longer now, the donor died. This is 50 years afterwards. Now, the person who got the transplant survived. And that was a unique thing. Why was that unique? Can anybody think why that might have been a unique situation based upon the technology at that time when all other transplants failed? All of the transplants in the 60s and 70s, with Moshe Feinstein's et al., writes it's a double murder when they took the first heart transplant. We'll talk about that in a moment. And all the other transplants in the 60s and 70s were abject failures. So why did this one kidney transplant in 1964 work?
Yes, like blood types.
So blood types, more than blood types.
Rejection medicine?
Rejection is the problem. That's what Moshe said. It was a double murder, the first heart transplant. So the one that was successful in 1964 was an identical twin brother. So they had two identical twin brothers. One donated his kidney to his brother that had, for whatever the reason, kidney failure. And it was successful because there was no rejection problem. So the most important problem in transplant surgery from a medical point of view is rejection. Kadosh Baruch Hu made our bodies unbelievably beautiful. Our bodies can recognize ourselves. My tissue doesn't get attacked from itself. My leg isn't constantly being fought at by my immune system and saying, let's kill this leg. Whereas if you put on another leg, Rachman Islam person's an amputee, and you try to put on another arm or another leg, it gets rejected. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the immune system of human being that's unbelievably complex. There are some, quote, secular scientists that have said they can see the hand of God in the immune system. That's how complex it is. As you raise Shemayim, of course we can see it. But even secular can say this is just phenomenal. It's just amazingly complex how your body knows that when you ingest a virus, you inhale a virus, you come in contact with the bacteria, your body fights it. But it doesn't fight the billions and trillions and zillions of bacteria that are normally in your body. It likes those bacteria. It accepts those bacteria. Your gut has more bacteria than you have cells, by a factor of 10. So you're really the parasite, not all the bacteria in your gut. You have more bacteria in your gut than you have cells in your body. You have cells of skin, but you have bacteria all over your skin. You have bacteria in your mouth. You have bacteria all over the place. And yet, Baruch Hashem, you go about life, nothing happens until you get Rachman al-Islam sick. A person gets chemotherapy. Person's immune system gets compromised. They take steroids or anything else that can harm your immune system, and all of a sudden everything goes haywire, and you're exposed to all sorts of infections, and Rachman al-Islam, they can be very serious, even fatal illnesses. So your immune system is an unbelievably complex organ that Hashem created that allows your body to recognize things that are foreign to your body. It's called the foreign body reaction. And at the same time, not attack yourself. So you don't attack your own heart. But if we transplant the heart into a person, the body will reject it. And that's why, when I remember this, I was a young boy, in 1967, Dr. Christian Barnard, who was a cardiac surgeon in South Africa, transplanted a heart into a Jewish person called, his name was Louis Washkansky. You don't have to know these. You're welcome to write them down if you want, but you're not going to get these on the test. My point isn't to teach you trivia, it's just to excite you. Because I remember this as a little boy and how exciting and unbelievable it was to read in the newspapers that somebody got a heart transplant. That was like the most phenomenal and unbelievable thing. You're somewhat jaded. Yeah, we do heart transplants all the time nowadays. But that was the most phenomenal thing. And then the second heart transplant in the world was done about a few weeks later at Maimonides Hospital in Brooklyn. Maimonides Hospital, Brooklyn, the second heart transplant. And they did one in Eretz Yisrael, the Baylisson Hospital, within a half a year. They all failed. Every one of the early heart transplant patients died. Rav Moshe Feinstein was asked the tshuva, the Igus Moshe. What does Rav Moshe Feinstein, Zatzal, think about heart transplants? And Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote a very, very famous tshuva, which everybody quotes and talks about. There's still no geya today, 100%. And Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote, this was a double murder. There was a double ritzicha. Number one, They killed the guy that they took his heart out from. And I'll explain to you why that is so. And number two, the heart that they transplanted into the guy, they killed him as well.
He's dying.
So you're not allowed to kill a person that's dying. There's a whole big discussion right now with physician-assisted suicide. There are a whole bunch of states in the United States that allow a physician to go and assist in committing suicide. Can prescribe and actively be involved in helping a patient to die. So in halacha, that's called ritzicha. Even though he's going to die. Even though he's going to die in a few short minutes. If somebody is going to die and you kill them, the only difference between you and another rotzeach is whether Mises Beis Din can be applied. So Mises Beis Din is a technicality. You can't give somebody Mises Beis Din if the person who's murdered is a treifa. It's a technicality. Marvin Sanhedrin talks about this. It's a technicality. Mises Beis Din can only be given to somebody who is going to live for more than a year. That's the definition usually of somebody who's not a treifa. As more than chayisha, which is usually defined as a yid. So if you kill a person with edim hasra, the whole works, and that person is in the ICU, terminally ill, the doctors say, you know, he's not going to survive, and you kill him, what we would call a mercy killing. So you're a rotzeach, less man de polig. Nobody disagrees with that. You are a rotzeach. The only difference is that whether you're going to get punished by a Kodesh Baruch Hu, or whether a Beis Din would punish him. So the Tains of Sanhedrin today, it's all moot anyway. We don't have a Beis Din. They can give capital punishment. 40 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, capital punishment was taken away, Bar Yuma tells us. So we don't have capital punishment anyway. So there's no practical difference between a Rotzeach that's Chayav Misa's Beis Din and the Rotzeach that's Chayav Misa from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. But you're a Rotzeach. So the fact that a person's not going to have a very long life, the fact that the person wants to die, that doesn't in any way mitigate the fact that you're a rotzeach. The only difference would be in the punishment that Beis Din could give. So Moshe said that this
punishment Beis Din is given only if the guy will live here or won't live here.
Say again?
Mises Beis Din given away. Will live here?
Mises Beis Din is only given if the person had a potential to live more than a year. So if you're Mises Beis Din, warn the guy, listen, give hasra. You've killed this guy, you chayav misas Beis Din. He says, I'm going to do it anyway. And he does it. You take him to Beis Din. Sanhedrin, 23 judges. They pass him that he should die. That's misas Beis Din. But otherwise, you can't give misas Beis Din if he's a treif. Gemara has a famous shaila. How do we know that Rove works even by misas Beis Din? Because they say, and this is also an interesting medical, ethical question that comes up. How do you know the guy's not a treif? You shot him in the heart. How do you know it wasn't a treif? So he said, do an autopsy. Gemara says, do an autopsy. I know, I do an autopsy. So Gemara says, the reason we don't do an autopsy is because maybe even if you did an autopsy, there's a hole right in the heart where he was a treifa, that's where the bullet went through. So how do we kill the guy? He says, we rely upon Rove. Most people aren't. Rove people are not treifas. So you can rely. This Gemara says this story. That you can rely upon giving a Mises Beis Din on the fact that Rove people are not treifas. It's an amazing thing. And the Gemara talks about, should you do an autopsy? Because why would you rely upon a Rove if you can verify it? So the Gemara wants to suggest that maybe we should do an autopsy. The Gemara says, no, doing an autopsy won't help. Let's say you don't find anything. But maybe right where the bullet went through the heart, the sword went through the heart, wherever you cut off his neck, whatever you did to the guy, that's where the treifa was, and you can't see it even on an autopsy. The Gemara says, don't bother doing an autopsy, it won't help. You rely upon the Rove. That's the Svara that the Gemara says. So, back to the question at hand. It's a double murder, Moshe says. Why is it a double murder? You're killing the guy that you take the heart from. This is as relevant today as it was in the time that Moshe wrote this tshuva shortly after 1967. And this we'll talk about later in the shiur tonight. The question is, when does a person die? How do we define death? And we'll have a separate shiur on brain death, so I'm not going to talk about that. But this is the crux of the entire machlokas today. Can a Jew be a donor for a heart? Can a Jew be a donor for a lung? Which I'll talk about momentarily or in a few minutes. Okay. Ramosha said, you took out the beating heart. When the person donated the heart, the Christian Barnard took out, The guy was alive. Deathly ill, but he was alive. And they took out his heart. He was alive. That's Ritzicha number one. That has not been solved if you say the guy is alive. The brain death question just makes it that you can take a beating heart from somebody who is halachically dead. We'll talk still about that in a moment. So hold your questions if you have about that. But the second part is the much more interesting part. The Rav Moshe says, when they put in the heart into Mr. Louis Washkansky, that was an act of Ritzicha. Now, Mr. Washkansky was not doing very well. He had a failing heart. He was going to die in a short period of time. That's why they chose him. I'm sorry?
It prolonged death.
Didn't prolong death. They were hoping it would prolong his life. But Rav Moshe said that that was called murder because you know why? They weren't good doctors. And they didn't study it enough. There was a tremendous rush to be the first place to do a heart transplant. So what they successfully did was learn the technology how to sew the heart in. They worked on animals and they were able to sew the heart in, and they did multiple experiments in animals, and they took this cow's heart and put it into this cow, and this sheep's heart into this sheep, and they had the technical surgery, no problem. The person did not die because the surgery was a failure. Mr. Washkansky died because his body rejected the heart.
Say if the person getting the heart was supposed to die within like an hour or two.
Doesn't make a difference. You're
and you
not...
prolong his, by giving the heart, you prolong the day, but then he died.
So if that equation were to be correct, then we could talk about that that's not murder. But that equation can never be as accurate as you're saying. We just don't have the medical ability to say that, and nobody would be able to put in a heart transplant on somebody that was about to die. They have to be stable enough. So the bottom line is, we took out a beating heart for Mr. Louis Washkansky. He would not have died. They predicted he probably had 6 months of life to live. So it's not the scenario that you're talking about. And if you talk about the scenario you're talking about, they wouldn't be a candidate for a heart transplant. So you have a limited amount of time. Right. Where they're not too sick to get a heart, and they're not too healthy not to need the heart. So he fell into that category, and Rav Moshe said they killed him because the state of medicine was not yet at that stage where they could transplant the heart into a person, and that's all because of the immune system and not because of the surgery. The technical surgery they had solved, but the immune system they hadn't solved.
I mean, the Sparta seems kind of like weak because if they didn't notice that it would be rejected. Like, I don't think they knew that that was the whole...
So, Rav Moshe wasn't saying that you're giving me some space to this.
No, I'm saying if he was saying goes into surgery in general and surgery just like that's a person
so that's when you have an expectation that the surgery will be successful, but every single heart transplant died.
But that's and Moshe the point. Would it be the ones that
in his tshuva, he was basically saying they didn't do their homework. They didn't study the problem well enough.
Did they know that it'd be rejected? They knew that was the reason behind it. Like that
they,
was.
They knew it was the reason. They were hoping that it wouldn't happen for whatever the reason. The medicine was relatively poor. Now I'm not blaming anybody. I'm not castigating.
Is any risky surgery a problem then? Because at that point you're not going to know.
So risky surgery is a problem if you don't have an expectation that you're going to do more good than evil. So a surgical procedure that has a 98% chance of failing and a 2% chance of being successful may be allowable if the guy has a 100% chance that he's going to die, but it's not allowable if there's a 98% chance he's going to live. Halacha takes into account risk-benefit. Now, it doesn't give numbers. It doesn't say anywhere in halacha what the numbers are. At most, it says rov. That's where we have miut and we have rov. We don't have 40% chance, 26% chance, 10% chance. Those aren't halachic numbers. But the basic principle in any type of a surgery is that if the risk-benefit is not there, halacha will not permit it. Halacha will sometimes say it's permissible, allowable. Sometimes we'll say permissible, mechuyev. And sometimes we'll say it's awesome. And that depends on how risky the surgery is and what the outcome is. For somebody to, and this is a big halachic shaila, somebody is taking a transplant for a non-life-threatening situation, the uterus that I was talking about. This woman would live to be 120 without a uterine transplant. And now giving her a uterine transplant puts her at risk. She's taking all these heavy-duty medications not to reject the uterus just so she can have a child. Now, even if you want to say there's a mitzvah, which there isn't for a woman to have a child, that's still not a reason. You're not allowed to put yourself at risk to perform the mitzvah. it's not one of the cardinal three sins, which is Yahrubah Yavar. The person has to climb to the top of the tree to get an esrog, and there's a 20% chance he's going to kill himself to go up in the tree. It's awesome for him to go up on the tree. So, halacha takes into account risk-benefit. Any good surgeon will take into account risk-benefit. I know many patients that surgery was not considered an option for them because it was too risky. The surgeon says, I'm not going to do the surgery. I don't want them to die on the table. Even though their prognosis was dismal, and then they eventually died, but the surgeon won't do the surgery because he's not going to be the one to kill them. So if there's not enough of a likelihood that the surgery will be successful, it's also to do the surgery, it's almost certainly going to kill them. And Rav Moshe basically paskin, the state of medicine at that time was, and he's 100% right, not that Rav Moshe ever needs my haskama, but I can verify his medical facts, the surgery was too risky, and it had no chance of success, essentially.
But in terms of risk-benefit, I mean, for this guy, yes, he might have 98% chance of dying, but bigger picture, we're not going to learn from this surgery.
So that's not allowed to be done. You're not allowed to kill somebody. You're not even allowed to do an autopsy.
We're not 100% killing him, though, because we have this slight chance he'll survive.
Moshe was basically saying that there was no chance. And Moshe is essentially carrying out the true medical opinion. Nobody survived those heart transplants early on. Everybody died within a short period of time.
The first couple, they knew why they weren't surviving.
Everybody knew why. It was rejection. Rejection wasn't the new thing that they just found out after they did this. They had done other transplants, and the problem in those days was rejection. That's why I pointed out that kidney transplant, which I think was in 64, was so unique because it was identical twin brothers. What do identical twin brothers have besides being able to fool their teachers and their friends? They have identical immune systems. So you can transplant within unity, no pun intended, a kidney from one brother into a kidney of another identical twin brother. And his body won't reject it. The body says, oh, that's me that you just put in. It's no different than if you took out my kidney and then put it back. I won't reject it. It's me. The body recognized that as me. Identical twins, and not just they look alike. I'm talking about identical twins have identical DNA. Have identical genomes, and therefore the body won't attack that, and that's why that kidney transplant patient in 1964 Columbia survived, because he didn't need to take any immunosuppressive drugs and his body didn't reject the kidney. And that's why we have today, we'll talk about this, the donor just died 5 years ago. I'm just showing you how long you can live without one kidney. But, you know, he donated his kidney, and then he lived for another 50 years with no problems. He wasn't a teenager at the time that he donated it. I think he died in his 90s. So that's a separate issue. Can you live without one kidney, which is a very important halachic point of view discussion, because people donate kidneys all the time today. What does halacha have to say about that? So in this situation, again, to recap, Rav Moshe says it's a double murder. You took a heart out of a guy, and then you took a heart out of another guy and put in a heart that was going to fail. Rav Moshe called it a classical case of two mitzvahs. And now we have to ask ourselves, is that true today? So what's the state of the art in medicine? You can never answer a halachic question dealing with science without knowing the science. And any rabbi that paskins this, you know, through nevuah or through Ruach HaKodesh is not doing it correctly. Of course, nobody does that. A rabbi who's a posek will learn all the halachas. Moshe knew a tremendous amount of medicine. Moshe Weiss, a shlita, knows a tremendous amount of medicine. Shech, the shlita, knows a tremendous amount of medicine. Ben Willard knows a tremendous amount of medicine. Because they ask questions from the doctors. And they learn from the doctors, and then they can paskin a shayla. So, in this situation, in 1980, a drug was developed called cyclosporin. Cyclosporin was a new class of what we would call immunosuppressive agents that allowed for the first time the person's immune system to be suppressed but not destroyed. If I destroy your immune system, you won't reject the heart, you won't reject the lung, you won't reject the organ, but you'll die because you're going to die of a cold. You're going to die of all sorts of simple, common infections. And patients still today do have problems who get all sorts of therapies that kill their immune system, because their immune system is allowing the cancer to grow, and we kill their immune system as we kill the cancer cells, and they hopefully can get back their immune system once the cancer is gone, but sometimes they die of infection. So this class of drugs called cyclosporin, and the drugs since then that have been developed, were able to save the immune system enough to fight infection and at the same time not allow the body to reject the heart or the other organ that was put in. And this was revolutionary. And from 1980 on, and to this day, we have much better drugs. The success rates for a heart transplant, does anyone want to hazard a guess what the 5 and 10 year survivals are for a heart transplant today? Somebody gets a heart transplant today, what's the likelihood it'll be alive in 2027? 90%. It's a good number. That's probably the right answer.
Okay.
The 5 year transplant survival is about 95%. Now this was 5 years ago's technology. The 10 year survivals are probably around 85 to 90%. And that's with 10 years ago's technology. We have better drugs today to treat some of the problems that can occur. And we've had patients that have gotten a second heart transplant just because the first one failed and we're putting another one. So the answer to Rav Moshe, I'm not putting words in Rav Moshe's mouth, I'm not chas v'sholem changing Rav Moshe's psak, but the facts that determined Rav Moshe's psak in terms of the double ritzicha, no posek would say today, are applicable. Rav Moshe will come back in Tchias and Mason with Harry B'Amerido, and he'll say, yeah, that tshuva no longer is applicable because it's not a double ritzicha. It's a single ritzicha, potentially. But the technology has improved. We'll get to that here. The technology has improved so much so that now we have a great case here. I'm almost certainly going to say the guy's like, yeah, 5% of the guys die within 10 years, 5 years. But they all would have died within 6 months. We don't do heart transplants on healthy people. We do heart transplants on people that have a significant amount of heart failure, that the prognosis for them is usually under a year, often under 6 months. So now we have a classical case of the risk-benefit ratio is overwhelmingly positive. Now some, a small percent, die right after the operation. I don't know what that number is. It's a 0.5%, a handful. Some people die from the operation. It's just not a success. They get an infection right away. They reject it still. They get a complication. They get a leak. They get a heart attack, whatever it may be. A very, very small, minute percentage, probably under 1%, dies on the table or near the table. Whatever that number actually is. Okay? So that number, well, that's a risk. Oh, Ritzicha. No, it's not Ritzicha. There's a 95, 98, 99% chance that they'll survive. So in that situation, you're allowed. Many would argue you're mechuyev to take that risk of a 10-year survival of 95%, 90%. So here's where halacha comes into play in terms of deciding can you or can you not. Now, that's a huge change from 1967. But the big question still remains is, what about the first problem, the initial ritzicha? We took out that guy's heart. We took out that person's heart, and we killed him. So nothing has changed. That person was not brain dead, to my knowledge. That person was alive according to halacha, according to every law under the sun, except he said, I'm willing to do this. His family said they're willing to do this. Halacha doesn't allow somebody to die.
Isn't that like DNR?
So a DNR is different. A DNR, we're not killing the guy.
We're just not saving him
because we consider futile.
It's allowing.
It's allowing the person to die naturally. That's what a DNR is. As opposed to something called a terminal wean or terminal sedation where you kill the guy. That's a physician-assisted suicide. That's ritzicha. That's not allowed. But to not do something and let nature take its course, let HaKadosh Baruch Hu take that person's life is halachically permissible under the appropriate circumstances. So there's a huge difference between taking a live beating heart out of a live person, albeit a very sick person, as opposed to letting the guy die, a natural death, who's very, very sick, to a totally,
Where's the difference in the line?
Where's the difference in?
Like the line, if he's like gonna die, can't you take it?
No, so halacha says chayisha is important. A second of life is infinite value, and you cannot do anything to remove somebody's chayisha. If you are, you are a rotzeach. The Gemara does have a whole discussion. If somebody is trying to die, so to say, the neshama is trying to leave the body, nevach, they're very sick, and there's a woodpecker going like this, or there's a guy banging on a anvil or something like that. Somebody's making noise, somebody's chopping wood. And every time the guy's neshama is about to leave the body, you get jolted back. So the Gemara says, are you allowed to tell the guy to stop chopping the wood? The Gemara says, yes, you can. Because that's a mania of the Ritzich. That's, you're just preventing the person from dying. That's different than actively going and doing something. So the Gemara says you would be allowed to stop the guy from chopping the wood. Because you're not really killing him. You're just allowing his neshama to leave the body. You're not doing anything active. That would be the similar idea. We're not going to resuscitate you. We're not going to go like this to the guy. Because it's not going to work anyway. Otherwise, we would do it. You're not mechuyev to do it. You're not mechuyev to put a tube down. You're not mechuyev to do everything for everybody. So in these selected situations, you have to know what those are. You'll have a separate talk about that. You don't have to do everything. But here you're talking about killing the guy actively, albeit he would only live for another few minutes or whatever period of time, a week, whatever. That is absolutely awesome, according to everybody. Nobody says otherwise. Question.
Does it make a difference if you start CPR versus if you don't and then you're shown a DNR?
Say it again. If you start CPR,
if you walk into a room and you're shown a DNR and you just go and start CPR,
that's
versus
head to go.
Versus
to
if you
not
start,
do something is head to go.
Even if you've already started though.
So once you've started, you have to decide is it successful or not. If it's successful, you're going to stop doing the CPR because the guy's alive. At some point, you can say the CPR is unsuccessful. So
right,
stop.
If you have just started CPR, you've been doing it for a minute.
So
and
you're not mechuyev to stop if it was inappropriately started. If it was an appropriate thing to do, then you should continue doing it. Mm-hmm. Whether you'd be chayev ritzich or not, I don't know if we could tell on this world because we can't say that the guy would have survived or not. If the guy doesn't survive, then he's dead already. So you can't kill a dead person. Since we don't know, we wouldn't know whether he did Ritzich or not. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu would know, could he have survived or not if you'd continued the CPR.
He's already dead. So what you're saying, at the time CPR is already dead.
So this is famous Shiloh also. You guys asking all the good Shilohs. Is a Kohen allowed to be there? If a Kohen was there and the guy died, and then you resuscitated him, was the Kohen Tomei? Was he Tomei Mace or not? Well, he was dead, but then he's alive. So if he ultimately survives, he wasn't dead.
Right, it's retroactive.
So it's retroactive. So in this situation, we don't know if he would have survived because you stopped it prematurely, only HaKadosh Baruch Hu would know, was he alive or was he dead? And you actively killed him. But I could argue there, he was already dead, you just didn't do everything possible to make him survive. So that's a very, unusual situation. So only HaKadosh Baruch Hu could know that there was still a potential. If a guy's asleep, or a guy holds his breath, right? I'm not dead right now because I hold my breath, so I'm not breathing right now, but I'm not called dead yet. So we view somebody whose heart stopped but was able to be resuscitated. When a guy goes on a heart-lung machine for a heart transplant, his heart stopped. His heart's not beating. There's no beating. We're putting his blood through a special machine. There's no heart beating at that point in time until you put in the new heart. He's not dead during that period of time. He's alive. Just we can't show that he's alive until afterwards. So this guy, sure.
Right, so the Gemara that you mentioned about a prisoner chopping the wood and the prisoner's shown up and leaving. So what are the nafkamines that come from that Gemara, the practical nafkamines?
So the biggest practical nafkamines is, are you allowed to do something that will just allow the person to naturally die? You're preventing the thing that was stopping him from dying. You're removing the preventing item. That the Gemara says is permissible. Put that into practical terms would be, if there is something that is a loud noise that's being made near the mace, and it's just not dying because of that loud noise. I can't explain that. Is that true medically or not? I don't know if that's really actually true. That's the example that the Gemara gives.
Right.
We don't make loud noises in the ICU trying to keep people alive, so I don't know whether that actually works or not in delaying death. But you would be allowed to stop making that noise, clearly.
Nothing that's keeping the person alive.
So that depends. You don't have to, we're veering off into a very, very important shear that you'll get. Do you have to start the next bag? I was just asked to Shaila Nebuch Matzei Shabbos. This past Matzei Shabbos, I got a call from Texas. I'm sorry, no. Minnesota. I got a call from Minnesota that asked me the Nebuch, a lady's mother was in the ICU. The Rav called me up. He didn't know the medical stuff, but obviously he called me up. I spoke with the family, and the situation was very, 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 very dismal. And I paskened that in that situation, I didn't think that they needed to hang the next bag of the blood pressure medication to raise the blood pressure. But I said, you can't stop the blood pressure medicine that's going in right now. I think if you would stop the blood pressure medicine, just turned it off, you would have caused the death of the patient. And that you're not allowed to do. But to not hang the next bag, that I thought was permissible because this patient was Nebuch and the wife. There was nothing we could do. We could have kept her alive for another few more minutes by giving her more blood pressure raising medications. Halacha doesn't require you, and may even say you're not allowed to do that. That's called prolonging death. That's the expression we used before. Prolonging death, Halacha doesn't view positively. Halacha views very positively prolonging life, but prolonging a death, that's a problem. So, come full swing. Okay, ask another question. Sure.
The guy you're giving the heart to, if he's a terminally ill and you're giving him another heart, isn't that prolonged death?
No. Today, he'll live 10 more years. That's not prolonging death. That's called prolonging life. Any disease, I can tell you, I have a 10-year expectation that he'll be alive. That's called very good medicine.
What's the prolonging life versus prolonging death?
So prolonging death is somebody that's dying. They're actively dying and we can't save them. But I could make the death certificate say 10:07 instead of 10:04. That's called prolonging death. If I can make it say 2019 instead of 2017, that's called prolonging life. Sometimes it's not so simple and clear.
Where's the cutoff for
that? So that's an individual case by case basis where for some people a week would be considered prolonging life. For some other people a week would be considered prolonging death. You have to look at the circumstances. And it's not a simple answer. The postmen don't always agree. Those are very, very, very shilas. And it depends sometimes who you ask the shilas to. If you ask it to Rabbi Yashiv versus asking it to Rabbi Moshe, you get two different answers. So getting back to our heart. Problem number two, it's not Ritzicha. Problem number one is totally dependent upon how we take the heart from the person. Everybody agrees if you take it from a person who is halachically alive, it's Ritzicha. That has not changed. The question is, today we have the capability of keeping a heart beating in what some people would call a dead person. The heart must be beating when you take it out, or else the heart won't be viable in the new person. So this is a medical piece of information. If I wait till somebody dies, and then try to take their heart out and transplant it into somebody else, I'll essentially be transplanting a broken heart. The heart will have failed before I even put it in. So you must take a beating heart, essentially, out of a person, and then transplant it. The only problem is usually beating hearts are in live people. That's why Moshe said it was Ritzicha. But today, if you hold that halachically speaking, brain death is halachic death, so then you're taking a beating heart from a dead person. Because in a brain dead person, the heart is still beating. Now, I'm not going to go fully into the definition of brain death. You'll have a shiur on that. Okay? So I don't want to get caught up in that. But suffice to say for now that if a person meets what are called New York State brain death criteria, which is based upon the Harvard criteria that were identified maybe 30 years ago, which is the law in how many states in the United States brain death is accepted? Everyone hazard a guess? How many states in the United States say brain death is a death?
40.
Any other guesses? Well, 50. Brain death is an accepted criteria of death in the United States. There is no state that disagrees with that criteria. New York, as well as some other states, have what is called an accommodation that should be made for families that object to brain death because of religious criteria. lot of Talmidei Chachamim learned a great advocation on behalf of Halacha to get these accommodations put in. And New York State has that accommodation. So even though the hospital can call the morgue and can call the funeral parlor and disconnect the respirator with impunity on somebody who's brain dead, if the family objects, the guy's not dead anymore. They can sign a death certificate. It's recognized by the courts, recognized by the government, recognized by everybody in the hospital that if you're brain dead, you're dead. But there's a special religious accommodation that's put in into the law. It says you can't say the guy's dead if the family objects. And that's halachically very important. Because as you'll learn, one of the biggest medical halachic issues today is what is the status of brain death? Death, until relatively recently in our history, has always been defined as the cessation of circulation. The heart stops. Well, the guy's not alive. The heart, the guy's not breathing. The guy's not alive. That was the definition of death. Gemara Yuma discusses this in great detail. But in recent years, there's been a whole discussion. It's based upon a Mishnah in Ahalos, actually, which deals with an animal that's been decapitated and is still moving about. Was that animal dead or alive? And it's nafkaminas in terms of Eber and Achai, it's nafkaminas in terms of Tumma, Vela, has other nafkaminas. And Mart Alos, which deals with a lot of Tumma and Tahara Shalos, says that once you decapitate the animal's dead. The fact that it's running around, you ever hear the expression a chicken without a head? Have you ever been to a slaughterhouse? So you see chickens without a head running around. Their brains are small enough that when you cut off its head, it doesn't know it's dead for another 20, 30 seconds. It runs around without a head. It's an expression of chicken without a head. So is that animal alive or dead? So the Mishnah Allah says the animal's dead in terms of all halachos. So therefore some want to suggest, and this is a huge machlokis in halacha, that a physiological decapitation, which is a fancy word for saying that the brain is dead, even though it's connected to the body, it's a physiological disconnect. A physiological decapitation. Some want to suggest, based upon that Mishnah and all those and other sources, that the patient is dead. So what if the heart's beating? The chicken's heart is beating. If you eat that chicken, you're not over Eidim and Achai. You're not over other Yitzurim. The chicken's not such a big problem. If this was a larger animal. So you're not over all sorts of other problems. Okay? So there is this idea. And some have carried it forward, essentially, into saying that if the person is brain dead, they're halachically dead. This is a huge machlokas. Many, many poskim on different sides of the fence, great gedolei poskim. There are controversies as to what some of the poskim held. Certainly, there are great, great poskim that say it is death. There are certainly great, great poskim that say that it's not halachic death. So from a practical point of view, it says a nafkamina in heart transplants. If you hold that the patient who's brain dead, the classical example of this is the guy that's on a motorcycle and he crashes the motorcycle, hits his head, his brain is destroyed. It's a 20-year-old heart. He has 20-year-old lungs. His organs, he's immediately brought into the hospital. They do CPR on him. The guy's fine. His heart didn't suffer any damage. He's brought in, he's brain dead. They do all the evaluations, this guy's brain dead. The donors, the organ donor societies jump on that person and they talk to the family about donating all of his organs. Legitimately so, if you hold that he's dead, that's a legitimate question to ask. If you're of the halachic belief that that is death, so then there's absolutely nothing wrong with taking his heart out. He's dead. You're allowed to take the heart out of a dead person to save another person's life. Only question really is, are you mechuyev to? If the family refuses. So that's a separate question. But certainly you're allowed to if you hold that the person is dead.
What about the second occupancy clip or
emotion? Yeah, so according, if you hold, and there are those that say that Rav Moshe held that brain death was death. There's a big machlokis as to what Moshe's opinion is. So there are those that argue, and I think potentially correctly so, that Ramosha said that brain death is actually death.
So you can take the heart, but the second act of the tikva of the
putting it into the milkfruit?
Yeah.
That's also gone away. Ramosha would agree that that's not a problem nowadays. They have 95% 5-year survivals. So, Lefi Ramosha's tshuva, if you hold the Ramosha holds that brain death is halachic death, which is possibly controversial, but many say that that was Ramosha's opinion, Ramosha would now switch around his tshuva from the late 60s to, instead of being a double ritzicha, would say it's pikuach nefashos and it's heter gomor. Fascinating.
Is it a mitzvah according to Ramosha?
Be a mitzvah?
It's a chiv?
No. Nobody says it's a chiv. No, I don't think anybody says it's a chiv. We'll talk about that momentarily also. But I don't think it would say that's a chiv. It's a nice thing to do. According to it also say it's a good thing to do. It's a chesed, shalemes. It's a wonderful thing to do. The argument to say it's not a chiv is that the person is dead, if he's dead. Neis v'chav shinu mitzvah, so you can't say it's a chiv.
It's a chiv
on who?
On the family.
Yeah, you're not allowed to take somebody, you're not allowed to be a grave robber. He has the rights to that. So that's why there are a number of other technical reasons why you can't say it's a chiyuv, according to many. If he's alive, you can say it's a chiyuv, but then it's probably a tzichah. Now, if you hold that brain death is not halachic death, like many great poets can do, Rav Yashiv certainly held that way. Many other Gedolei HaPoskim hold that way. Question where Rav Shlomo Zalman held. Many say Rav Shlomo Zalman held that brain death is death, halachically. The Aguda Rabbanim hold that brain death is not brain death. Rav Shech holds that brain death is not brain death. Rav Willick holds that brain death is not brain death.
Sorry.
Brain death is not death. Sorry. Brain death is not death. So all these Poskim disagree with this idea that you can take a heart from a brain dead person, because they hold the person's alive. Maybe a goseis, maybe very, very sick, maybe not a good prognosis, but alive. I'm sorry?
You said a goseis can still...
If you want to call this brain dead person a goseis.
Oh.
So you're not allowed to touch him. You certainly can't take his heart out.
So
all these posts would say that Rav Moshe would still say it's one yitzir. Again, Rav Moshe himself may not, but based upon Rav Moshe's idea, if you can't take out a living heart from a living person, no matter how sick they are. And this is the brain death controversy, halacha l'maisa. Can you take a heart from such a person? So some posts can say yes. The official position of the Israeli rabbinate, the Rabbanut in Eretz Yisrael, says you can. And that's why in Eretz Yisrael they allow transplants. The bigger question comes up is, you're a Talmud of Rav Yashiv, and you hold you can't do that. Can you receive it? Are you a co-conspirator in this ritzicha?
You can't, because it would have gotten someone else anyway.
So that's not 100% true. When they do this, they match it to see who's the best.
You know,
so you're the best. They're doing it for you. You're the guy in the ICU there right now. So are you allowed to go and do this? So the post can say yes. And many people are very upset at that psak. Oh, if you can't give, you can't get. That's the argument that people like to say. It's not a halachic argument. It's an emotional argument. Halacha doesn't view things through an emotional prism. The poskim say it's not a problem. The analogy that my Rebbe, Shlita Rav Willig, says is, for example, if I don't hold from the Eruv in a community on Shabbos, okay, and you do. My minhag is not to hold from an Eruv. I'm a Talmud of Rav Aaron Kotler. He didn't want community Eruvs. I'm a Talmud of Rav Aaron Kotler. I don't hold from community Eruvs. It's a perfectly good community Eruv. The Rabbanim, the Vod, it's a perfect community Eruv. You hold from the Eruv. Are you allowed to bring me something through the Eruv? Am I allowed to use it? You bring me a kugel from your house. Am I allowed to eat that kugel on Shabbos? The answer is yes. Ah, you got there according to you through Isser. No. You hold it was Mutter. For you, there's no Isser. Now it's in my house. I'm allowed to take advantage of it. That same rationale is you hold that it's Mutter to take the heart out. The cardiac surgeon is a frum erlich, a guy with a long beard and payas, and he holds from Shlomo Zalman, who says that you can take it out. He's transplanting it into a chassid of Rav Yashiv. No problem. That's the psak halacha according to almost everybody. Okay, it gets a lot of people upset. Never get upset at psak halacha. I'm sorry? So the actual doctor has to be of the opinion that brain death is death, or else he's over with Sicha. A Talmud of Rav Yashiv cannot be a cardiothoracic transplant surgeon. I don't think there are too many anyway. But it could be, because he would be doing an active Ritzicha. Okay. So now that's, in a nutshell, the really glamorous stuff. But I'll tell you even a more common area, which could be Nogeya Lamaisa. I know a whole bunch of people that have donated their kidneys. They're alive and well. And several people from our shul that have donated their kidneys. Several people from our shul that have received kidneys. I have a very good friend of mine, Yitz Hashem, he's going to get a kidney transplant after Pesach from his son. Never, his kidneys have failed, his son's a perfect match. Yes, it's Hashem. Sometime, maybe over the summer, maybe beforehand, he's going to get Yitz Hashem a kidney transplant from his son. Does halacha allow that?
Isn't that a little different than a heart, though?
It's totally different than a heart.
So, you can take murder involved.
No murder involved. Are you allowed to do that?
To save a life?
Yeah.
Why not?
So, but that's the question. Are you allowed to do that? Are you mechuyev to do that? The son is tested by the doctor, you're perfect match.
As in the father?
No. The son, the father and the son. You can ask the question for both of them. You can ask the question for both of them. So that opens up the whole question of live donations. For people that are alive, can you donate an organ if you're alive and give it to somebody else? As opposed to taking it from a cadaver. From a cadaver, we just said the heart you can take, we consider that guy a cadaver who's brain dead. So certainly you can take a kidney from a cadaver. If you can take the heart, you can take the kidney. Why should there be any difference? And that's been going on for a long time. Cadaveric kidney donations is the standard. People die, they donate their kidneys. Halachically, according to almost all posting, allowable. Question is, I'm alive. Can I donate a kidney to somebody else? So what is the issue over here? So this is a famous Yerushalmi. This is one of my favorite Yerushalmis. And I brought it in. It's in Trumas. In the 8th Perek Daf Mem Zayin, in the Yerushalmi that I have, there are different systems of Yerushalmi. It's not like the film of Shas, where everybody has the same Yerushalmi. Anyway.
Is the question to give it or to receive it?
Both. Both. Yeah, we can ask both questions. Rav Imi Itzit. Rav Imi, one of the Amoraim in Eretz Yisrael, was captured. Okay? Captured by Hamas. Right? He was captured by the terrorists in those days. Along comes Rav Yonason, and he says, Yikare Chameis Besadino. Prepare the burial shrouds. He's dead. He's a dead man walking. He's not going to survive. That's what Rav Yonason said. Along comes Reish Lakish, Rav Shimon Lakish, from the Bavli, the same Rav Shimon Lakish. Rav Shimon Lakish comes and he says, I'll say it. I don't know kotil, I know miskatil. I'll go and save them. Either I die or they die. Who's Reish Lakish? And we know the history of Reish Lakish.
Used to be abandoned.
So there are those that suggest that he was a very strong person based upon the Gemara. He was able to jump a huge amount. Some suggest he was a gladiator. Actually, he was a gladiator from the gladiators. He lived at that time. And he was a very strong person. It says when he became Reish Lakish, he weakened in strength. He wasn't able to jump as much anymore. So Reish Lakish was a commando. He's a tough guy. He was in the Green Berets. And he said, I'm reading Yerushalmi. I'm not making this stuff up. This is what the Yerushalmi says. I'll go, and they'll either kill me or I'll kill them. Is he allowed to do that? Are you allowed to do that? So he goes, and he's successful. Whole story, Gemara goes through, we don't have time right now. He goes and he's successful. So, do we paskin this Yerushalmi that Reish Lakish was allowed to go and put himself at great risk in order to save another person's life? Do we allow a person to do something very dangerous to themselves, potentially dangerous to themselves? We don't. Gemara doesn't say how likely he was to have died, how likely he was not to have died. He went and he saved Rav Imi. So, are you allowed to do this? Do we paskin this Yerushalmi? He did it. Reish Lakish did it. So, do we paskin this Yerushalmi that Reish Lakish was allowed to put himself at risk to save Rav Emi's life.
Don't we say, like, say your blood is better than mine?
Right, we do. We do say that. So are you allowed to bypass that principle?
No, I'm saying that person that he's going to save, you said, like, why?
Exactly. So
he should.
He should not have just saved. Who said? He's not allowed to give up his own life to save somebody else's life.
I think the opposite. He should have had to. Because
We always say your life takes primacy over somebody else. If I have something...
He says, shoot me. If it comes back, he says, shoot.
No, that's the Yehar Yavar. I'm not allowed to kill him. That's where it says. I'm not allowed to actively kill him. Rish Lakish should have said, I'm sitting at home. I'll say, tell him. I'll say, lots of tell him. Who says he has to be a commando? Is he allowed to do that? So do we pass in this Yerushalmi?
I mean, he's not necessarily 100% going to die.
I'm sorry?
He's not going to die.
It's not 100% he's going to die. Perfect.
So he'll be allowed to.
How much of a risk does it have to be?
I mean, I don't know what his dad, like...
It's not a risk for him because he was strong.
Yeah, because he's like a super...
Alluding to a teretz that some of the posts can give over here. That Reish Lakish, it wasn't a risk, and that's why he's allowed to. If we don't poskim like this, if we don't say you can put your life at risk to save somebody else, they argue that Reish Lakish wasn't putting himself at risk. This was me going into the ring against Mike Tyson. Mike doesn't stand a chance. Well, maybe the other way around. Right? So this is not a risk. So some give exactly that term. This is Reish Lakish. He's the heavyweight champion of the world. He's going up against some thugs. So some give that answer. But that's not the normally accepted answer. The question is, do we paskin this Yerushalmi? This Yerushalmi clearly says that Reish Lakish paskin, that it's mutter to put yourself at risk to save somebody else's life. So you have to look in the Rambam. How does the Rambam hold over here? So the Rambam, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch as well, if you see somebody running after somebody else, lahargo, to kill him. Achar ervo lebolo, somebody rachmanos is going to rape a woman. Okay? V'yochol lahatzil, and you can save him. And you don't? Hare zebitel mitzvah saseh, you have not done the mitzvah saseh of saving somebody else's life. All our shnei lavim, and you've also been over two lavim. That is lo sochos einecha, and lo sochos einecha, leros, ya lo samar odam reyecha. So for the Rambam, it seems that you have to go and save. Shulchan Aruch says almost the same thing. Haroes chaver, Shulchan Aruch quotes in the Rambam, this is in Hilchos Rotzeach Shmiras Nefesh, Perek Aleph, Sif Tes Vav, in Choshen Mishpat, in Tav Chav Vav, Haroes chaveru toveya bayam, o listin boyin olav, o chayaroa bo olav, v'yocho la'atzilohu bi'atzmo, o sheyizkor acheru la'atzu v'lo hitzil, over alo samo damriach. So, it seems here that you have to do it. Except there's one problem. They're not talking here about you putting yourself at risk. It doesn't mention anything about putting yourself at risk. So, the Kesef Mishnah brings down Kosav Hagos Maimonios. Biyushalmi. Are you Shalmi? Are you Shalmi in Terumas? Afilu lahaknis atzmo besofek sakon chayev. The Hagos Maimonios, brought down by the Kesef Mishnah, says that this din that the Rambam paskins and the Shulchan Aruch paskins includes putting yourself at risk. He paskins Yerushalmi. Okay, and he says, "Mipri shehalo vaday v'hu sofek." Rav Emi was going to die. Hamas said, "We're killing him in 5 hours. Unless you release all the Hamas terrorists in Eretz Yisrael, we're going to free him in five. We're going to kill him in 5 hours." Reish Lakish knew 80% chance he'll be successful. 80% chance he won't be successful. It's a vaday versus a sofek. The Yerushalmi paskins a vaday versus a sofek. You're mechuyev to give up your life. That's the understanding of the Hagos Maimonios. Nobody else holds like that. If you look in Shulchan Aruch, the Samoa brings down this Yerushalmi, and he says, Benira. Okay. The Tom, he brings down the Hagos Maimonios because it's Vade and a Safek, and the Safek you have to do in order to save the Vadai. He says, Gamze Shmitu HaMachaber and the Ramah. Nobody paskins this like the Hagos Maimonios.
And the Rambam?
The Rambam doesn't either. It's only the Hagos Maimonios is understanding of the Rambam. He's the one that says the Yerushalmi is what the Rambam is passing. Nobody else holds like that. Everybody else says it's only because there's no risk to the people. You know what I do? I call 911. If you don't call 911, then you're a Rotzeach. Then you're over Los Achos and Los Samod. If you call 911, you're Yotze. The guy's drowning. You throw him a life preserver. You're Yotze. You're not mechuyif to jump in if it's dangerous. He's 250, you're 150. 40% chance he's going to drag you under as he kills himself, as he drowns himself. You know, Mechoyev! That's how we paskin. That's what Shulchan Aruch says. That's how we paskin. We do not paskin this Yerushalmi. Whole question, why not? No, we don't have time for it to go right now.
Rambam allows it, Shulchan Aruch doesn't?
No, nope, Rambam doesn't allow it. That's the Hagos Maimonios understanding of the Rambam, is that he said the Rambam is following the Shita and the Yerushalmi, but nobody else says that. Everybody else says the Rambam is talking about when there's no risk. It's only if there's no risk.
So is there an Isser still though? On someone who does?
Yeah, you're not allowed to do it. You're not allowed to kill yourself. It's suicide.
No, sorry, not if you're
not allowed to do it.
If you're successful.
You're not allowed to do it. Hold on. He says, furthermore, Haposkim Harif, the Harambam, Harosh, Hatur, the Mechaber, the Ramah, Lo Heviu Bipiskeim. They didn't possibly miss Yerushalmi. So Halacha L'maisa, it would seem you're not allowed to put yourself at risk to save somebody else's life. So now I ask you again, can you give a kidney transplant? Now with the knowledge that you now have, can you give a kidney transplant?
What's the risk?
Very good. So what's the risk? So when are we having this discussion? We're having this discussion in 1996. There was a more significant risk to a kidney transplant. People occasionally died from giving a kidney. Nowadays it's almost unheard of. Any transplant program that would have the donor die, it'd be shut down. Baruch Hashem, the ability to donate a kidney, the actuarial tables say that the person has essentially the same lifespan as somebody with one kidney as with two kidneys if it was taken out medically. If you have disease, that's a different story. But if you do a surgical procedure on somebody and there's an infinitesimally small risk that they'll die on the table, it's never perfect, never absolutely no risk, but the technology has reached a stage where if you give a kidney, you're almost guaranteed that you'll be living a normal lifespan.
Anyone who holds that is not allowed?
I'm sorry?
Anyone nowadays
holds that? So now that's the question. Very good. So now what would you say? Given the facts that I just told you, that a kidney transplant is extremely safe, where would you say that falls in? Mechuyev? Allowable?
Allowable.
Why?
You're putting yourself at risk.
There's no chiyuv, but it's based on.
But it's. Not enough. I heard somebody say.
Not enough of a risk.
Not enough of a risk. So, where do you get that from? Nobody that I read it yet said it. So I have to read you three additional sources: the Mishnah Berurah, the Aruch HaShulchan, and the Shulchan Aruch HaRav. And they all essentially say the same thing. I won't read it inside. You find that they're on the spot, Tov Chavav. You basically have to take a balance scale. I'll read you just one of them, because it's kedai to see it inside at least once. I read you, I just have it over here, the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah says, this is in Hilchos Shabbos rather, not in the Choshen Mishpat. It's in Hilchos Shabbos, Shin Chof Tes. Okay, the Mishnah Berurah says, Mikol Mako, Im Yesh Sakonu Lahamatzil, Eino Mechuyev. If there's a risk for the person who's going to save the other guy's life, you're not obligated to do so. Nobody can tell you that donating a kidney is zero risk. 0.001, probably. But nobody can say it's zero. So donating a kidney, Mr. Berurah would say, you're not Mechuyev to do. That's what you all said. Because Chayov Kodim L'Chay Chaveiro, I always take precedence over everybody else. However, he says, Afilu Sofik Sakona, Nami Odiv Sveko, Didei Mivadi L'Chaveiro. And even if me, it's only a 1% chance I'll die, and him, it's a 100% chance he'll die, I'm not Mechuyev. I'm not Mechuyev to give up my life to save his life. However, the Mishnah Berurah says, Ulam, however, Sarich Lishkol Hadvarim Heitev, balance it out real well. And ask yourself, Im Yesh Bo Sofik Sakona V'lo L'Daktik B'Yoser, don't be such a medactic. I can't throw you the life preserver because as I throw it to you, I may wrench my shoulder. And then when I go for physical therapy, I'm going to fall down and hit my head and 0.000001? Yeah, probably. I have some ridiculous likelihood. The Mishnah Berurah, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav said, weigh carefully this decision. And this has huge ramifications. This essentially matters a kidney transplant in one person to another person. It matters a liver transplant, a live person to another person. Now, a liver transplant is riskier than a kidney transplant. You will have an occasional death nowadays in a liver donor. Not a lot. But you can donate your liver. A person only has one liver, but you can donate part of it and successfully, especially a parent to a child. It's a very successful operation. It can be life-saving for this poor child that's born without a liver or a functioning liver. And people do this ma'aseh b'chol yom. They donate pieces of their liver. The mortality is well under 1%, but it's not as good as for a kidney, which is zero, essentially. Close to zero. So halacha would say, you're not mechuyev. Nobody can force you to donate your kidney to your relative. Nobody can force you to donate your kidney or your liver or an organ like that to your relative. That you can't force somebody to do. But, is it usur? Not usur. Here you need the famous tshuva that we have from the Radvaz. The Radvaz, and it's found in two places. Shailas Tshuvas Radvaz. Aleph, Tof, Kuf, Pei, Beis, for those that like addresses. The Radvaz was asked the famous question. Horrible question. The local Arab leader, the caliph, said to a Jew, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to kill your friend, Yankel, unless you let me cut off your finger. I'm going to kill Yankel unless you let me cut off your finger. Nice caliph. Some things never change. This was a real halacha l'maaseh shaila. There's the Radvaz. He has two tshuvas on it, somewhat slightly contradictory. But they essentially, the Radvaz paskins, it depends what the risk is. If there's a more than 50% chance that you'll die, it's usur for you to do this. If it's less than a 50% chance, so then you're a chassid if you do it, but you're not mechuyev to do it. And that's essentially what the Mishnah Berurah, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Shulchan Aruch HaRav are all saying. You're not mechuyev to do it if it's more, you're not allowed to do it if it's more than 50%. You're not mechuyev if it's less than 50%. But if it's 49%, most people aren't going to do it. If it's 43%, most people aren't going to do it. When it becomes less than 1%, that's what all these posts can say. If the risk is really minimal, then you should consider doing it. But you're not mechuyev to do it because it's not a zero. So that's why the poskim today all say, I don't think there's any poskim alive today, that would say you can't do a live kidney donor or you can't do a live liver, but none of them would be mechayev you at this point in time. We're getting close to the point that kidney is so safe that you could theoretically argue that a person could be forced to donate a kidney, but we're not there yet. Now that leads itself to another question. What about a bone marrow transplant? You have a bone marrow that could be donated to somebody else. You say, listen, I don't want to do that. It's painful. Nobody dies from a bone marrow transplant, not the donor. It's a little bit painful. Sometimes it's not even painful. You just have to take a medicine that has some side effects. and they take it out of your blood. They don't have to stick a needle into your bone. Sticking a needle into your bone is not fun, but it doesn't cause death. Nobody dies from bone marrow donation. And if you're just taking some medicine that gives you some side effects, and they then take the bone marrow from your blood, essentially, take stem cells, it's a very safe procedure. There are poskim that would say, at least in theory, that you could force somebody, in the time of a Sanhedrin, you could force somebody, strap them down, and take it against their will. Now, I'm not saying you can do that in the United States. I'm saying this in theory. But in the times of Chazal and in the Sanhedrin, that would fall into the category of you're mechuyev to save somebody's life. You're a rotzeach, or at least you're ovelo saman al dam riecha. If I have bone marrow, and some would say, Allah has kama makama, blood. I have a rare type of blood. He needs my rare type of blood. I'm the only source of it. There's no artificial blood. He dies without my blood. A chiyuv, according to some poskim. Now again, that's in theory, because we can't do that. United States and Eretz Yisrael do not allow you to follow Shulchan Aruch solely. There are laws. If the guy says, I don't want to do it, you need informed consent. You need permission to take his blood or his bone marrow. But at least in theory, if you get to the point where there's no risk, one could argue that you could do this even against somebody's will.
There's never not a risk. You could always rely on some crazy...
So you can essentially say nobody's ever died from a blood donation. I think that's a statement that you can make. Nobody in the last 30 years has died from donating blood. A couple of guys faint. I'm sorry?
People can get infections.
No, when you donate, I'm not talking about you receiving. Oh. You're donating. You're taking my blood. You're taking from my blood. In the United States, nobody has died from a blood donation, to my knowledge, since I've been a doctor. 3 years. I don't think in the last 30 years anybody's died from a donation. So my time of knowledge about this, nobody's died. Nobody really dies from a bone marrow donation. I'm not aware of anybody dying from a bone marrow donation. I can say it never occurred. It's a very, very, very safe procedure. So one could argue that if it's so safe, and you're not a suffolk versus his vada, he's vada going to die. So one could make the argument that halacha would demand mechayev you, at least in theory. At least in theory. You ask a shaila to rub. I don't want to donate. Do I have to? The rabbi would say, yeah, you have to. In those situations, because you weigh it on the balance scale, it's so low. Let's end with one really light transplant, because there's a lot more. This is good, we're scratching the surface. There are so many interesting questions. Who do you take the kidney from? Baruch Hashem, all the brothers want to give the kidney. You take the kidney from a married brother or from a single brother? They want to donate the kidney to the father. So there's so many interesting shilas. You have never a child that is a mentally handicapped child. The mother needs the kidney. Can a mentally lab bar das person, let that be a child, be a 30-year-old kid who's lab bar das. The mother's the caretaker for the kid. The mother will die without the transplant. Can you do it to a person who doesn't have das? A person doesn't have das, how does he give consent? Not an easy shilas. So all of these shilas, you can find many of these shilas and the discussion in Rabbi Dr. Steinberg's encyclopedia in the section on Hasholas Eivarim. But you can find them in the original poskim of Zilberstein Shlita has a whole bunch of these questions and many other poskim. These are real contemporary, real shilas. Everyone needs a real shila. A married brother and an unmarried brother. They both want to donate the kidney to the father. So Zilberstein Paskins, you have to let the unmarried brother donate. Because the married brother, he has a wife, and you have to take her into account. She's not willing, possibly, to give it. So there's a lot of interesting shilas. Last one, we'll just end with this. Very, very cute or non-halachically important shila, but nevertheless, Rav Moshe has this as an aside in one of his tshuvas. Hair transplants. I look around the room, Baruch Hashem, none of you in need of it. Myself as well, Baruch Hashem. Hair transplant, is that permissible in halacha or not? You take the hair from a different part of the body, or theoretically from somebody else, and you transplant the follicle you put it into? Is that Mutter or us?
Why would it be us?
So why would it be us?
That's
a recognition. So Moshe has a tshuva on this. You know where Moshe's tshuva comes up on this? Moshe's asked, this is the greatness of Moshe and the greatness of Yidden that asked such questions. The guy was bald. He was embarrassed to be seen without his toupee. He goes to shul every morning, and the toupee is a chatzitza on his tefillin. So what should he do? So what do you think Rav Moshe says? So Rav Moshe says that what this person should do is put on tefillin at home without his toupee, make the bracha, put the tefillin on at home, and then, because he's embarrassed to go to shul without his toupee, come to shul, put the tefillin back on without a bracha, and daven with shul with the tzibur, and so you won't be davening with your shul rosh. But you got your yotzei the mitzvah tefillin, and this way the kavod habrios. So you're not davening with your tefillin. You have your shul yad on.
What are the issues with hair transplants?
So in that tshuva about the toupee, Rav Moshe says, and by the way, I've been asked about hair transplants. That's where it comes in. Is there any issue of chatzitza? If you transplant something, now I always love to give this example. Is the comb over a chatzitza? What is the comb over? When somebody doesn't have hair here, but he has hair here, and he goes like this, and that's called the comb over. You guys all look at me like I'm crazy. This is a very, very big thing when you get older. Do you take your hair that's on your side? The male pattern baldness is down the front, but the sides retain. So they grow the hair long over here, and they flip it like that, and that's called the comb over. So that's a chatzitza, according to Moshe, because it's not where it's supposed to be. A chup. None of you have a chup. Your Rebbe will tell you if you have too much hair, you have a chup, and you should get a haircut. Right? Chup's not a chatzitza because the hair is growing in the normal place. That's a hashkafic question. It's not a chatzitza. So Rav Moshe was asked, do these hair plugs that you put in there, is that a chatzitza? And Rav Moshe says, no, that's now part of your body, and it's not considered a chatzitza. So hair transplants are permissible. But to conclude, Rav Moshe says, why in the world would anybody want to do that? And that's a more important question. That will lead us into our plastic surgery discussion that I'll have in a future talk with you. Is plastic surgery permissible? But the underlying principle that Rav Moshe says, which is an overriding principle, is we should be thrilled. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us whatever he gave us, we shouldn't be embarrassed about the way we look. We shouldn't go try doing all sorts of artificial things to change something that's superficial. I'm not talking about a heart transplant. I'm not talking about taking medications to help you. But if your hair is gray, so what? If you don't have hair, so what? Rav Moshe says, why are you focusing on something like that? But, Rav Moshe says, I understand that people will do that. And I write you a tshuva and tell you how it's mutter if you care about something that you shouldn't care about, but I care about you. And Rav Moshe says, I care about how people are going to be upset, even though they shouldn't be, and I address halachically. So he passes hair transplants a mutter, he passes for the guy to put on tefillin at home under, without a toupee, and put the tefillin on over the toupee in davening, so you can daven tefillin and see, but not be embarrassed. That's the greatness of Rav Moshe, and that's the beauty of this type of a discussion about transplantation and risk-taking in halacha. There are parameters, and everything is a shaila. You have to understand the facts. Yes, it's a sham. A posse can come to the right conclusion. Questions, anybody? Questions? Okay, have a good night. I'll see you guys next week.
You guys don't
have here?